From time to time we pray for the lapsed. Looking back over the last few decades, I think of the variety of clergy and laity whose Christian walk has just faded away. The dropout stories that I'm familiar with fall into several categories. I think of the friends I knew at university who were involved in Pentecostal churches up to their eyeballs, many of whom now haven't been near a church in years. As a former Pentecostal pastor, now turned Anglican priest, said to me, that churches promised too much and oversold the dramatic results of Christian faith, so they turned away in disillusion as their lives hit the white water of adult living. Then there were the faithful Anglican laity who just faded away after decades of church going, retiring, as it were, from a way of life that no longer seemed to find rewarding. While church fights and fallings out with clergy account for some of these, a general feeling of ennui and loss of energy and interest seems more common. As one elderly Anglican layman said to me recently, I just lost interest. I thought to myself, let's hope God hasn't lost interest in you. What we're dealing with here is the issue of Christians who go off the boil, who lose the fire in their belly, who let the faith and the hope and the love just fade away. That can happen too with people who stay on while allowing themselves to become breeding grounds of negativity, cynicism and indifference. It is these attitudes, with all their attendant spiritual dangers, that feed the three mightiest forces, as it seems to me sometimes in the church's life: inertia, entropy and apathy. It is the spiritual dangers and the spiritually destructive effect of allowing these eroding processes to go on inside a believer's life that gives an angry edge to the telling of this morning's gospel story, one that appears in Luke also, but without the biting quality to it. There is a pressing and urgent quality to the invitation to join the banquet of the kingdom. There is an all-comers-are-welcome policy at these feasts, while at the same time there are no grounds for complacency in assuming that admission into God's banquet is a guarantee of staying there. That strange ending to the gospel reading this morning about the man who had been press-ganged into attending the wedding feast and he was then tossed out for not having the right gear on is all about that. As Daniel Harrington writes, it provides a warning that mere admission is not enough. An appropriate response is needed. There are things in Anglican church culture that are not helpful in all of this. We sit lightly to the obligation of regular Sunday worship while scoffing at Catholics for drumming it into their people that they need to be at Mass every Sunday. But if we only turn up once or twice a month, or even less than that, then we've cut ourselves off from that experience of the risen life of Christ directly entering our being. Such a thin spiritual diet will leave us spiritually undernourished. There simply isn't enough sustenance to keep us going. I'm constantly surprised too at the number of Anglicans I meet who don't have the habit of daily prayer in their lives. I know from personal experience that if you stop praying, then you'll lose the experience of the presence of God. If I want to feel that God is absent, just isn't there, then stop praying and you'll start feeling just like an agnostic or an atheist. We're a tolerant and inclusive church that's easy to join because it doesn't make many immediate demands on people, and that's just great. But sometimes that easygoing culture seeps right through into the committed core and gives the disastrous impression that we're a kind of social club. Of course, a warm community life is important in a parish, but undergirding it all, there needs to be a sense of being focused on God, of meeting together for spiritually enriching purposes, and of being sustained by essential spiritual disciplines. A clue to all this is the extent to which Christians first pause for silent prayer when first entering church on Sunday morning before proceeding to talk to their neighbours. We're a church that values sound learning, but it's surprising how many Anglican Christians haven't learnt much about the faith since their confirmation instruction. We are living in a time when a surrounding secular culture throws up many sophisticated challenges to Christian belief. So our continuing Christian education is essential if we are to avoid being bamboozled or over-impressed by some media skeptic or shallow controversialist with the latest debunking theory. I've been talking about the good habits of a disciplined search for holiness, but our life with God is about more than just techniques and a well-organized day. What keeps our faith resilient, it seems to me, is what I would call our fundamental attitude to life. Each one of us faces a particular challenge to faith, based on our personality and our inner experience. Some people struggle with belief their whole life long despite having a deep faith in God. It's as though there's part of the chemistry of their inner life that makes it hard for them to imaginatively grasp an unseen spiritual world beyond this one. There are others who have an instinctively cautious, conservative, almost timid approach to life that likes the comfortable, familiar ways of a predictable existence. They shrink from the challenge that we always lose control of our lives at some stage, particularly towards the end, and that being a Christian means accepting suffering as an unavoidable part of being alive and living a life of faith. Others have been not altogether well prepared by their early life experiences to have the robustness, fortitude, courage, and common sense that can take misfortune, loss, and tragedy in its stride and use it as grist to their mill of becoming a stronger, more mature person. They struggle to accept that the road to resurrection always leads through and over the hill of Golgotha. Whatever our particular life challenge is, no matter what kind of a spin on the ball the Christian faith poses for us, the question is, will we allow these difficulties to drive us into the arms of a living God or away into the arid desert of nihilism and despair? Or should I say, the surrounding culture of Sunday morning brunch and indifferentism? It would be unusual for these challenges to be magicked away, though some do achieve amazing attitudinal turnarounds. The trick is to use them as a propellant that drives us forward into a deeper experience of the ground, source, and goal of our life. We refuse to let these problems define us. Rather, they become the contours of our transformation at the hands of God. We're committed to growth and change in the life of faith. The words of Psalm 1 then become true in our experience. Blessed are those who do not sit down among those who mock, but their delight is in the law of the Lord, and on that law they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted beside a watercourse, which yield their fruit in due season. Their leaves also do not wither, and look, whatever they do, it shall prosper.